The Public News Service Daily Newscast, April the 14th, 2021. I'm Mike Cuthbert. Maryland is receiving national praise as the first state in the nation to repeal its police Bill of Rights and enact other police accountability measures. Our Diane Bernard reports a coalition of criminal justice reform groups says the moves don't go far enough to curb police misconduct.
At the ACLU of Maryland, Yannette Emanuel says the new measures, including restrictions on use of force and no-knock warrants and greater transparency in police offenses, are positive steps, but lawmakers failed to include independent community oversight, which Emanuel thinks is the most important element of police accountability.
The bill allows for civilian participation in an internal process, but it is not a separate process from the police department that is community-controlled and truly accountable to the community.
Governor Larry Hogan had vetoed the bills, but the Democrat-controlled state Senate and House overrode the veto. Hogan said he opposed the bills because they would erode police morale and pose significant risks to police safety.
In the 2018-2019 school year, about 3,100 Maryland students were arrested, and about 80% of those arrests were made by school resource officers. All New Hampshire residents age 16 and older eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. Groups are working to get the word out about the different vaccines and how to sign up to get one.
At 66, Jill Martin of Dover and her husband, who's 76, were part of the first wave of the vaccine rollout. Martin says the process went smoothly, and while she's still wearing a mask and limiting close contact with folks outside her household, she says being vaccinated gives her more confidence in public.
I do think some people hold back because they lack confidence with their tech skills to do all this online sign up. And both of my sons were jumping on helping us. In fact, we had one of them on the phone while we were doing it the first time.
In addition to online registration at vaccines.nh.gov, regional public health networks are contacting those who are homebound to facilitate vaccinations at home. I'm Lily Bolke reporting.
And as public school students return to classrooms in New York, the state health department there has new guidance. While the CDC recommends reducing social distancing requirements from 6 feet to 3 in classrooms, the new state guidance specifies circumstances when 6 feet of distance should be maintained. Annie Pallotta is the president of the New York State United Teachers and says the new state guidelines also go a step further.
A mask policy has finally been put into place, a mandatory mask policy in New York State, because before this, it was merely a guideline.
More than 50,000 students will be back in New York City classrooms later this month. This is PNS. A new report makes the case that Ohio workers deserve a higher minimum wage.
According to Policy Matters Ohio, nearly 30% of Ohio's workforce, or 1.5 million people, would benefit from raising the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2026. Ohio's current minimum wage is $8.80 an hour. Researcher Michael Shields says people working on the front lines of the pandemic stand to benefit the most.
Grocery store clerks who keep the shelves stocked, direct care workers who take the risk on themselves to care for our loved ones during the pandemic, child care workers caring for our kids so we can go to work. We've all benefited from the work of folks who are doing these jobs. We've got to start valuing that work by paying a living wage.
Ohio's minimum wage was tied to inflation in 2006, but Shields explains it never made up for the value lost as productivity has risen in the previous three decades. According to the report, a minimum wage worker today can purchase 28% less than they could in 1968. Mary Sherman reporting. This story was produced in association with Media in the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation.
In Durham, North Carolina, people who prefer two-wheel transportation say bike lanes with physical barriers reduce road fatalities, and they're partnering with local transportation officials to add flexi-posts to existing bike lanes and limit car traffic on some residential streets.
John Talmadge with Bike Durham says in 2018, the region saw more than 100 car crashes involving pedestrians or cyclists. He explains light individual transportation, or lit lanes with flexi-post barriers, can be used by walkers, people in wheelchairs, and even scooters, and believes they could cut fatal accidents in half.
Just painting a line on the street is not provide enough protection for people, and lots of people don't feel protected, and so they still won't use that lane.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Finally, groups urging Northwest leaders to act on Idaho Congressman Mike Simpson's infrastructure and Snake River Dam proposal. Eric Teganoff explains the plan would breach the four lower Snake River dams to help salmon, whose numbers have dwindled for years.
It aims to restore what American Rivers calls, in a report out this week, the most endangered river in the country. Julian Matthews, a Nez Perce tribal member with the group NIMIPU Protecting the Environment, says the dams are harming tribal treaty rights to fish for salmon in the region.
We didn't give them up and say, well, yeah, but if there's no fish, then we won't have that right. We said that we have that right, and we want to make sure that right is enforced by the federal government and our elected officials.
Some groups and tribes in the region are pushing for more negotiations on the proposal so it can be included in the Biden administration's infrastructure plan. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations across the nation and online at publicnewsservice.org.